All right, so get ready to explore something amazing today, because we are diving deep into Vesterled's Trädgårdsstad.
Which is more than just a pretty suburb in Stockholm.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a living example of this fascinating urban planning movement.
Right. And we've got this incredible guide, Verna Vesterled's Trädgårdsstad.
Dedicated to, well, I guess understanding
and
preserving what makes this place so unique.
Exactly. And I think what's so cool about this is we're not just talking about one little neighborhood.
No.
This is like a whole philosophy of city design and how cities should work that goes back over a century.
Yeah.
And you know what? It has some really relevant lessons for cities today.
Absolutely.
So let's rewind way back
at
like late 1800s.
All right.
Imagine cities just bursting with factories and people living in pretty terrible conditions, actually.
Yeah.
And that's where this guy, Ebenezer Howard, comes in.
Okay.
He wasn't an architect, a city planner.
No.
But he was really troubled by what he saw. And his solution was honestly radical for the time.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, we need self-sufficient garden cities that bring together the best of city life and country life.
Right.
And his book, Garden Cities of Tomorrow, just took off.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a global phenomenon and really got people rethinking how we live in cities.
It's amazing how a single idea can kind of take root like that and spread all over.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And thanks to guys like Unwin and Parker, who were architects who took his ideas.
Right.
We got Letchworth.
Yeah.
The world's first garden city in England.
Mm-hmm.
And there was Gartenstadt Hellerau in Germany.
Yeah.
Around the same time, that also became a really important inspiration for Sweden's take on the garden city.
Now, you know, Howard's ideas, they spread all over, but Sweden always likes to do things their own way.
Right.
And a big difference is that, unlike in the UK, where they had a lot of row houses in their garden cities, Swedes really preferred having their own detached houses with their own little gardens.
Yeah, I can see that.
So different.
Swedes love their privacy and their connection to nature.
Absolutely.
So I could totally see why sharing a wall with your neighbor wouldn't be a popular choice.
No.
And that led to Trädgårdsstaden.
Yeah.
Which literally means garden city.
Mm-hmm.
And Stockholm got their first one in 1907.
Okay.
Gamla Enskoy.
Mm-hmm.
And that really set the stage for what would become a major thing in Stockholm's growth.
Now, in Stockholm, it was actually a city engineer, Herman Jigberg, who really saw the potential of this garden city model.
Yeah, he was pretty ahead of his time.
Yeah.
He understood that as Stockholm grew, they needed a plan to avoid that kind of chaotic sprawl you see in some other cities.
Mm-hmm.
So he starts this thing where they're strategically buying up land to make sure development happened in a more controlled and thoughtful way.
And he found a really strong ally in Carl Lindhagen,
Stockholm's mayor at the time.
Exactly, who was a huge champion of the garden city model.
And especially for making housing affordable.
Absolutely.
It's like they were the dream team of sustainable and equitable city planning.
Yeah.
And here's where it gets really interesting. They introduced this tomträtt system.
Okay.
Which is basically a leasehold system.
Okay.
So instead of buying the land and the house, you'd purchased just the house.
Okay.
But on leased land.
Right.
So it made homeownership so much more accessible.
So like a long-term rental agreement with the city.
Yeah.
But you own the building.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So it had a huge impact on affordability and gave the city more control over development.
Right.
Which helped make sure they stuck to those garden city principles.
It's actually similar to what they do in some parts of Canada and the UK too.
Oh, interesting.
Though the details vary.
Okay.
But yeah, it had a big impact there as well.
It's just such a cool example of how innovative policy can really shape a city's growth.
Absolutely.
Now, speaking of growth, Vesterled itself actually comes into the picture a bit later, tied to the expansion of the Nakkas-Bibandian tram line in the 1910s.
Okay.
Oh, the tram line.
Yeah, and neighborhoods kind of sprung up organically around it, but in a planned way.
Okay.
And they were really inspired by the landscape itself.
Yeah.
So instead of just imposing a rigid grid, they followed the natural contours of the land, preserving the hills and the valleys, and even ancient burial mounds.
It's that respect for the existing environment that gives Vesterled its unique character.
I love that they incorporated those ancient burial mounds into the design.
Yeah.
It's a, like a beautiful way to connect with the history of the land.
It is.
And then you've got those charming shortcuts they call Krokar.
Yeah, little pathways.
Yeah, winding through backyards.
Connecting people and places in such a delightful way.
Yeah, like a secret network for pedestrians.
Yeah.
Just adding this whole other layer of intimacy and community to the neighborhood.
Okay, so we've talked about the vision and the planning.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about the architecture. Yeah. Because Vesterled is like this living museum.
Yes.
Of architectural styles.
Right, each reflecting the changing tastes and the social ideals of its time.
Exactly.
So in the 1910s, it was all about national romanticism.
You see this in Villa Lucisporten.
Oh, yeah.
A grand wooden home with ornate details and a sprawling garden.
Oh, I can picture it.
The epitome of that era.
Yeah.
The grandeur, the romanticism.
Yeah, but as we move into the 1920s, the style starts to shift.
It does. The 20s brought in the era of 20th century classicism.
Okay.
Homes became more compact. They embraced lighter colors.
Mm-hmm.
And you see these subtle nods to classical architecture.
Yeah.
They're all about efficiency and practicality.
Yeah, reflecting those changing needs of the time.
Right. But even with this shift toward the practical,
mm-hmm.
those kitchen gardens, they remained.
Yeah. I can see that appealing to Swedes.
Oh, absolutely.
With their love of nature and self-sufficiency. It's like striking that balance between modern living and that connection to the land.
Exactly.
And then the 1930s brought another transformation.
It did.
With functionalism.
Like functionalism, yes.
Those streamlined designs, flat roofs, and balconies.
Yeah, all about maximizing light and air.
Yeah, it's so cool to see how Vesterled's architecture really mirrors these broader changes in society.
It is.
But behind all this beauty and innovation is this deep commitment to preservation.
Right.
Which is where that Verna comes in.
Or protect.
Yeah, in our guidebook's title.
It's a call to action.
Yeah, to safeguard Vesterled's character against all those modern pressures.
And those pressures are real.
Oh, absolutely.
A century later.
Right.
Vesterled, like many historic neighborhoods,
yeah.
is dealing with those demands of a growing city.
Yeah.
The allure of quick profits for developers.
Right.
And even the changing ways people live.
Yeah, it's a constant balancing act.
It is.
Between preserving the past
mm-hmm.
and adapting to the present.
It is a constant tension.
And it really highlights the importance of understanding those original design principles, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
It's about asking, how do we adapt and evolve while still staying true to the soul of this special place?
Hmm. Yeah.
And honestly, that's something so many cities around the world are struggling with today.
Absolutely. And you know what's fascinating about this guide is it doesn't just talk about, you know, the aesthetics or the history.
Yeah.
It actually gets into the legal framework that's in place to protect Vesterled's cultural heritage.
Okay, so let's unpack that a bit. What kind of laws are we talking about here?
Well, there's the Cultural Environment Act,
mm-hmm.
the Environmental Code,
okay.
and the Planning and Building Act.
Yeah.
And they all kind of work together to make sure that any new development or renovations
yeah.
respect the historical character of the area.
So it's not just about individual homeowners.
Yo.
Making good choices. It's
yeah.
like a whole system designed to protect these special places.
Exactly. And it's important to note that it's not always perfect. You know,
right.
the guidebook actually points out that some of those older zoning plans might not be fully equipped to handle today's challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Like some plans might allow for too much density, which could threaten that garden city feel. It's this ongoing process of adapting those rules to meet new realities.
It sounds like they're always trying to find that sweet spot between progress and preservation.
Exactly. And here's a fun fact that really shows how seriously they take this in Sweden.
Okay.
Even if something isn't spelled out in the zoning plan, the law still requires people to respect the historical character of the area.
Wow.
It's like the law itself recognizes how important it is to preserve these neighborhoods.
It's so interesting to see how these legal frameworks have evolved alongside these neighborhoods.
It is. But beyond the laws, the guidebook really emphasizes this mindset of
yeah.
respect and responsible stewardship.
Mm-hmm.
It's about homeowners being active participants in preserving their little piece of history.
And it gives some really solid advice on how to actually do that.
It does.
Like it encourages people to research their home's history.
Yeah.
Almost create like a little archive of its original style and features.
It's like becoming a detective of your own house.
I love that.
Great.
And on a more practical level, it stresses regular maintenance.
Yeah.
Which sounds kind of boring.
It does.
But it's so important for preventing big, costly repairs down the road.
Right. It's much easier to keep that character if you're staying ahead of things.
Yeah, it's like that old saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Exactly.
And it makes sense, especially when you're dealing with older homes that have unique features.
Right. And they have this cute anecdote about a kitchen renovation
Oh.
that uncovered the original spot of a wood-burning stove.
Oh, wow.
It's like these houses are full of secrets.
I love that it really adds to the romance of living in a historic home.
It does. But we can't forget about the practicalities of modern life.
Right.
Things like energy efficiency and accessibility.
Those are huge.
Yeah, and the guidebook gets into that,
After.
emphasizing that these updates can be done in a way that keeps the historical integrity.
Right.
It's about finding those solutions where you get the modern comforts without losing the character.
So it's not about living in a museum, but finding ways to blend the old and the new.
Exactly. And this is where they get really specific, which I love.
Okay.
They talk about using the right materials and colors, even down to the gravel you use for the pathways.
Wow, they're really into the details.
They are. But what about those bigger challenges,
Right.
the ones that affect the whole neighborhood?
Yeah, what are we talking about here? Like, what are the biggest threats to Vesterlead's future?
Well, one of the biggest is just the pressure of a growing city. As Stockholm expands, the need for more housing gets bigger,
Right.
and that puts pressure on areas like Vesterlead, which are seen as prime real estate.
That's like that classic tale,
Yeah.
charming historic neighborhood.
Yeah.
Attract developers who see dollar signs.
Right.
And suddenly there's this tension between preserving what makes it special and making room for more people.
And the guidebook calls out two specific things.
Okay.
First is climate change,
Right.
which obviously impacts building practices,
Yeah.
but also threatens those natural features that make Vesterlead so special.
Right. Those trees, the ecosystems, the way the land manages water.
Right. All of that is vulnerable to the changes coming with climate
It's like
change.
the very essence of Vesterled is at risk.
It is. And the second threat is a bit more about human nature, I'd say.
Okay.
It's that danger of overdevelopment. You know, those projects that put profit above everything else
What?
and disrupt the character of the place.
Like those cookie cutter developments that totally changed the feel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the guidebook gives some pretty stark examples of
Oh,
this,
no.
like developers buying multiple properties, tearing down those historic homes.
And putting up massive, out-of-scale apartment blocks.
Exactly. It's like the neighborhood's identity is being chipped away.
It's heartbreaking to see these places lose what makes them unique.
It is, and it creates conflict
Right.
between residents who want to protect their community
Yeah.
and those who see these developments as progress.
Like a David and Goliath kind of thing.
It can feel that way. The guidebook even mentions a specific seminar where experts voice their concerns about one really bad example.
Wow.
It's a reminder that these are real battles.
Yeah, it makes you think, how do you balance the need for more housing
Yeah.
with that responsibility to protect what makes a place unique?
It's a tough question.
It really is.
But the guidebook offers some hope.
Okay.
It emphasizes community engagement,
Yeah.
residents getting together to stand up for their neighborhood,
Yeah.
and it stresses the importance of making informed decisions, understanding those laws, the zoning regulations, and using that knowledge to protect what they love.
So being proactive and knowing your rights.
Exactly. It's not enough to just love Vesterled.
Right.
You gotta be willing to fight for it.
That's powerful. But for people who aren't used to navigating all those legal things, it can be really daunting.
Oh, absolutely. And the guidebook recognizes that.
I
It
know.
actually gets into the nitty-gritty of the permitting
Oh,
process.
wow.
What you need to know if you want to make changes to your property. That's so
It
important.
breaks it down so people can participate.
Because knowledge is power, especially when you're up against forces that don't share your vision.
Absolutely. Now, I know we've covered a lot,
We have.
and it can feel overwhelming.
Yeah.
So let's zoom out for a sec and talk about the key takeaways.
Okay. I like it.
Whether you're a homeowner in Vesterled or just someone who cares about preserving special places,
Yeah.
what can we learn from this guide?
I'm ready to distill the wisdom.
Okay, well, first, just observe. Walk around your neighborhood, really look at the buildings, the landscaping, those little details that make it special. Notice the scale, the materials, the colors, even how the streets are laid out.
Yeah.
It's about seeing those defining characteristics.
It's becoming a student of your own surroundings.
Exactly. And as you're observing, ask yourself, what's the story here? What shaped this place?
Right.
How does it reflect the people who built it?
It's like archaeology,
Yes.
uncovering those layers of history. I love that. And once you've got that appreciation, think about how you can contribute to its preservation, even in small ways. Maybe it's picking the right paint colors, planting native species, or advocating for thoughtful development.
Right. Understanding that even those little things, when everyone does them, can make a huge difference.
And remember, preserving something doesn't mean freezing it in time.
Right.
It's about letting it evolve while respecting its past.
Right.
It's a conversation between generations.
Yeah, like being a steward of a legacy.
Exactly. Honoring those who came before and creating something future generations will appreciate.
They really understood that sustainability isn't just about rules and tech, but like a whole culture of respect for the environment and thinking about future generations.
Yeah. And that respect went beyond just the environment, too.
Oh, right.
Like, remember those ancient burial mounds?
Oh, yeah.
They didn't just bulldoze them over for progress.
Right.
They made them part of the neighborhood, you know?
Yeah.
Like a reminder of the connection to the past.
It's so powerful how progress doesn't have to mean erasing history.
Yeah.
Like, we can build a future and still honor what came before us, and Vesterlet is proof.
It is.
Okay. But they didn't just talk about sustainability.
No.
They actually put it into practice.
Yeah. Take a look at how they did it.
So let's dive into that.
Yeah.
I'm really curious how they made sustainability like part of Vesterlet's DNA.
Well, it all started with those kitchen gardens.
Oh, yeah.
They weren't just there to look pretty.
Right.
They were a key part of that garden city idea.
Yeah.
You know, encouraging residents to grow their own food so they wouldn't have to rely on outside systems.
Right. And connecting them more to the land.
Exactly. It's like a mini version of that self-sufficiency that Ebenezer Howard was talking about.
It's amazing how those ideas are popping up again.
Yeah.
Like urban farming community gardens.
Like we're rediscovering that old wisdom.
But what's really cool is Vesterlet's sustainability wasn't just about what individuals did.
No, it went deeper.
Okay, tell me more.
It was built into the community itself.
Wait, really?
Yeah, remember the Tomtrett system?
The leasehold thing?
Yeah, that made owning a home easier.
Yeah.
It also let the city encourage sustainable practices.
Oh, so it wasn't just about affordability.
Right.
It was about having some control.
Exactly. The city could set standards for building materials, energy use, landscaping, you know.
Making sure those garden city principles were everywhere.
Right. It was this smart combo of social responsibility and caring for the environment.
Which so many cities are trying to do now.
Yeah.
Shows that good policies can really make a difference.
Absolutely. Those planners were way ahead of their time.
They really were.
Yeah.
They knew sustainability wasn't just some fad.
Right.
It's a whole way of life.
And they made it part of Vesterled's story.
Creating a place that's not just beautiful, but connected to the environment and its history.
Exactly.
As we wrap up our dives into Vesterlet, I'm just amazed by all the thought and care that went into making this place.
It's like a guide for how to live sustainably and in a way that's really human.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you wonder, how can we bring those ideas to our own communities, even if we don't have the same history or architecture?
That's the big question, right?
It is.
How do we take those values, like respecting nature, having a sense of community, loving beauty, and make them real in our own way?
Maybe it starts with asking, what can we learn from Vesterlet?
Right.
How can we use those principles where we live and in our everyday choices?
It could be as simple as planting a tree.
Yeah.
Walking instead of driving.
Mm-hmm.
Supporting local shops or getting involved in our community. When everyone makes those little changes, it adds up.
It does. It's about changing how we think.
Right.
Realizing we all have a part to play in making the world better.
And it's not about being perfect.
No.
It's about making progress and always learning.
We can all try to be better caretakers of the planet and our communities. And Vesterlet shows us how.
He does.
So as we say goodbye to Vesterlet.
I'm left feeling inspired and hopeful.
Me too.
We can make our world a better place.
Yeah.
And who knows, maybe someday people will look back at what we did and be amazed.
That's a nice thought.
It is so. Until our next deep dive.
Yeah.
Keep exploring, keep learning, and keep asking those big questions, because the world is full of amazing stories that can inspire us to create a better future.
Happy exploring.
And happy gardening.